The stars are right, and that means it's time for another episode of The Whisper in Darkness. I'm your host, The Man from Lang. Thank you very much for joining me today. On this episode, we are going to wrap up our look at the player cards in the Path to Carcosa Investigator expansion with a look at the neutral cards in the box. On this episode, we are going to discuss Calling in Favors, the suite of Desperate Skill cards, Emergency Cash Level 3, and the Key of Yeast. There are spoilers throughout if you care about that sort of thing. If you enjoy what you hear, remember to like, comment, and subscribe. Before we get started, a quick reminder of how we rate cards here on The Whisper in Darkness. The best of the best get an Elder Sign, while the worst of the worst get an Auto Fail, and the cards in between get a +1, +0, or Elder Thing, respectively. Cards that you build around or cards that are good in one particular deck get a Bless Token, while cards that we believe are destined to end up on the list of taboos or are simply bad for the big game get a Curse Token. Before I get started, I'd like to thank the patrons of this channel for their tremendous support. You all rock. If you'd like to be amazing like these people and support the channel's goals and see your name on this list, head over to patreon.com, sign up for a tier of your choice, and claim your rewards. That would be awesome. Special thanks to Cole Monroe Chitty, Nicole Fiscus, and Nate Lost in Time and Space for their contributions to the channel. I couldn't do it without you. Without further ado, let's get started. Welcome back to the channel. We are going to wrap up our look at the player cards in the Path to Carcosa Investigator expansion with a look at the neutral cards in the box. There are quite a few of them, actually. We're going to sort of boil down the skills to just one of them because they're all basically the same. But we are going to start off with Calling in Favors. It is a one-cost event with an intellect and agility skill icon favor trait. Choose an ally asset you control and return it to your hand. Then search the top 9 cards of your deck for an ally asset and play it, reducing its cost by X. X is the cost of the ally asset. Return to your hand. Shuffle your deck. Thoughts about Calling in Favors?
Oh, man. Great card. Great card.
Yeah, it is fun.
Yeah, this is just a fun card.
Yeah, and it kind of enables a deck that, like, it kind of enables a deck that runs, like, lots of allies, like, mm-hmm. 6 or 8 or more. Yeah.
And allies,
because you can, like, bounce them around.
Yeah. Yeah, and generally, like, allies in this game are, like, static things. You put them on the table, they never go away, whereas like, Calling mm-hmm. in Favors sort of demands that they're more dynamic than that.
Yep.
So, like, it totally changes the way you look at an ally. Now you're yep. thinking allies like Lab Assistant and Art oh, Student are going to be way more useful because you can bounce them, pick them back up, play them later, get their effect again. Mm-hmm. You sort of get this like little engine going with Calling in Favors, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, and it's kind and of interesting how just one card, Calling in Favors, and it's neutral, thank goodness, like mm-hmm. enables new tricks that you couldn't do before. Yeah, that's very cool.
And like if you happen to be in Survivor, you could do like a chance encounter. Or you could like pitch the cards into your discard yeah. pile and like use Calling in Favors, like bounce them back. Yeah. And yeah, there's some cool stuff you can do.
Yeah, it's also worth noting that the damage and horror on the ally, they go away. So like it's kind of like healing in that regard. Mm-hmm. Yeah. The only mm-hmm. thing that sucks is when it whiffs, then you feel bad. But at least the ally mm-hmm. came back to your hand. So if you're using other allies, where sending them back to your hand is a good thing, this card is pretty good.
I've had a really hard time getting this card to work for me. I'm not sure whether it's just the way I build decks or...
You gotta lean into it, man.
Yeah.
You gotta lean into it.
How many allies yeah. do you need in your deck to make this viable?
8?
Yeah, I was gonna say like 6 to 8 usually seems like
yeah.
the number
yeah,
you
want. Yeah, it's probably the reason I've had trouble with it, because I've tried to put it in decks where I have fewer allies and it just doesn't...
Yeah, because then the 9 is not deep enough. If you're only, because let's say you have 4 allies, you have to have 1 on the board already. So that's, you have maximum 3 left in the deck. Mm. And then you got to dig 9, which is like,
yeah, you know. So it's a little rough. Yeah.
Certainly the power of this card is very high, especially if you have allies that you can play repeatedly from your hand in order to mm-hmm. get some sort of benefit, like the Art Student. There's no better feeling than playing an Art Student, getting a clue, bouncing said Art Student back to your hand to reduce the cost of another ally, and then playing the Art Student again to get another mm-hmm. clue. That's
it's a good time.
Very very handy. How would you rate this one?
No, I think I gotta give this card a bless token, because it really does feel like a cornerstone for a deck. You know, like, I've built whole decks around, like, using Calling in Favors. Mandy is a really good candidate for that. I guess now, what's-his-face, Charlie Kane is a good target for this card.
Oh, yeah, classic. Leo Anderson.
Get Leo Anderson. There's just so many great investigators, and how they use this card kind of changes. You know, like, Mandy is going to use this just for pure raw value. She could dig deeper, she can get extra allies or what have you, and Leo's going to use them to pick them back up in his hand so he can play them for cheaper later. And you know, it's like, it's all very different in what they're doing, and that's really kind of the fascinating aspect of this card.
Yeah, and the common thing is, the common theme here is you got to be like all in on allies, like have eight or more. Because if you're not all in on allies, you can start looking at things like Flare. Flare, another very underrated card, by the way, can pull allies out of your deck, but you don't have to have one on the board to bring back. So it's almost like for this to work, like for Calling in Favors to do you good, it's got to be an ally where you want to bring it back to your hand. And that means you got to be running allies you want to bring back into your hand, and then you got to run allies that you want to put into play. So you're looking at eight or more, which is kind of a definition of a bless.
Yeah, I would agree. This is definitely a bless token. Mm-hmm. I know when I have built decks, don't make the mistake I make by putting, say, four allies in your deck and thinking that's enough, and thinking that, okay, I'm playing Charisma, you know, that's going to be enough. No, I think you really need to lean into this quite heavily if you're going to get any value from it. Four is simply not enough to make it work.
I'm so glad this card is in the box, though, because like, it's so cool that one little card can enable like all sorts of different decks. It's so cool.
This is one of my favorite cards in the game, because it's one of those cards that makes you feel smart, and those are my favorite types of cards in this game, are the cards that make you feel smart the more you play them. They're just very satisfying on a player level. It seems so innocuous at first. It's like, why would I want to return an ally to play another ally? And then you're like, oh, that's why I'd want to do that. Light bulb goes on, and then that really kind of sparks that, you know, that genuine interest in the game. That's, I think, for me at least, like, why I would play a game like this.
The next card is actually going to represent a whole bunch of cards. These are the Desperate Skills that were released in the Echoes of the Past Mythos pack. There are four of them, one for each of the skills. We have a Desperate Search, which has four Intellect skill icons, Reckless Assault, that has four Combat skill icons, Run for Your Life, which has four agility skill icons, and Say Your Prayers, which has four willpower skill icons. And they basically all have the same text, max one committed per skill test. They all have the Desperate trait. Commit to a skill test only if you have three or fewer sanity remaining. I'm just going to give this one a bless token right out of the gate, because I think this goes in one particular deck, the Desperate deck. You can build it out of various investigators, but you sort of need to build around it, because these are blank until you have three or fewer sanity. So usually with that deck, it's like, okay, how do I get to three or fewer sanity to turn on my Desperate skills as quickly as possible? And then you go from there. Thoughts?
I think that was definitely true when these cards were initially released. I think as time has gone on, that has become increasingly easier to do. Especially with that stupid, stupid card in the thick of it that just enables all of this to just work right off the gate. So it's like, okay, sure.
Yeah, but also what's happened in the meantime is that skill cards have gotten better, and you don't like have to go through the hoops, you know, or to get four skill icons as much anymore.
It's very true as well. Like, imagine playing Say Your Prayers over something like Promise of Power.
Yeah, exactly. I was thinking like Daring like daring. It's three skill icons, basically is three combat and three agility, and draws you a card. It's like, why would you play any of these over daring? You know, because daring is like that darn good. Yeah, the skill cards have gotten a lot better since the standard of skill cards when these came out. Also, a problem I think these have is they don't draw you a card like the basic core cards do. So what can often happen, and I think especially is true with the combat and the intellect ones, is that you end up at a point where you've like overkilled the skill test, you've overshot it, and you essentially could have gotten to the same point by just playing perception or overpower, and you would have drawn a card. So it's like you jump through hoops just to overshoot the skill test and deny yourself a card. I don't know. Between skill cards getting better and like needing to go jump through hoops, because these are blank, they're blank if you don't meet the requirements. And just the fact that you can often run into the overshooting problem, I'm personally not a fan of these. That being said, I think Say Your Prayers is pretty good, because when you have low sanity, what takes you out? Sanity damage. What protects you from sanity damage? Say Your Prayers. Yeah, so I think that one I think is pretty good. The rest, not a big fan. Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's a fun deck to play and to build.
Yes. Yeah. Ashcan Pete.
But I think the novelty of it wears off pretty quickly
Yeah.
because the deck really is focused on doing one thing. And it, like you said, Matt, it's kind of overkill most of the time. And there are kind of precarious situations where you end up with very few sanity, and then you draw that auto fail and it kills you anyway, and you're like,
That's it.
well.
Yeah. Yeah. I think a survivor can do it because survivors have some auto fail protection nowadays. So if you really, really want to lean into this, I think Ashcan Pete's the way to go. Because like at least with Ashcan Pete, like you could just ready Duke if they're blank. You know? Like so. But still, it's pretty niche and there's just better options now. Yeah.
It's like paradoxically, it's easier to use them, but less reason to want to.
So, Yeah, I think
not a
you
big
guys
fan of
make a
these.
lot of good points. I think back in the day, there were only a couple of ways to turn these on, and at the time, these were, the most icons you could get on skill cards. And of course, because you could get four icons, you were sort of restricted in how easily you could get them. I do agree that overshooting is a problem as soon as you get, I think, more than three icons. Most of the time, you're probably not getting full value for all of those icons, which is, I mean, if you look at the Winifred Habermuck starter deck and her signature skill on, I think it has six icons on it, which most of them, unless you're committing it to a willpower skill test, most of the time it's just wasted. You use the first three icons and the rest are just pointless. How would you guys rate this one? I gave it a bless because I think if you're going to build this deck,
Yeah, it's fair.
you got to sort of lean into it. I'm not putting these in just any deck and hoping, at one point in the game, I'm going to be at three sanity. I want to start at three sanity ASAP. And there are a couple of ways to do that. I believe it's, what was the classic way with Ashcan Pete and St. Hubert's
Oh,
Key?
the St. Hubert's Key. Yeah, that's it.
Yeah, that was the one way to do it. Of course, you have to draw St. Hubert's Key to enable that build, which is
On the other hand, I mean, you've got Calvin, who could get down to three sanity pretty fast with trauma. And then, of course, you got Roland. You got our old boy Roland, who could get down to three sanity pretty fast thanks to his weakness.
Yeah, I think I agree with the bless rating with the asterisks on Say Your Prayers, where sometimes I just include a copy of that because you need it.
Personally, I just don't think like yeah, I see why you would call it a bless. It's just I don't know. It doesn't seem like it does enough to really justify like making a whole deck around it. But I understand the bless. So imagine like a very blue tinted tentacle for these, because I feel like they're a trap most of the time. With the exception of Say Your Prayers, which I'm gonna give a zero. Because that like I said, when you have low sanity, Say Your Prayers is pretty good from keeping you at keeping you from going all the way down to zero sanity. I'm thinking if you're like a Finn and you have like one sanity normally and you've been hit by rotting remains, then say your prayers is actually pretty good.
Winifred too.
But
Never good.
yeah, or like Winifred, yeah, exactly. So yeah, I'm not a big fan of these except for say your prayers. That one's actually pretty good.
Yeah, if you have a limited card pool and you're interested in building the Desperate deck, Ashcan can do it pretty easily. There are a few other investigators who you can play around with it, but it's not a deck that I have been particularly interested in playing, largely because these cards aren't very exciting. I mean, you're building a
Yes.
deck with all of these skills that are basically just skill icons. It's just not very
Yeah.
exciting, so.
Yeah, I think as the game has progressed over time, they have found much better ways of making skill-oriented decks more interesting.
That's
Commander
true.
Sharp is a
Yeah.
great example of a skill deck that's really fun to play. Xylas is a good example. I think
Winifred.
like he, yeah,
Yeah.
Winifred's another good example. Yeah, they've made them more fun than just I pump out a raw number of token or a raw number of icons, and that's
Yeah.
really all this kind of iteration did. So I like you said, I think there's just you can have more fun with skills than just doing this.
Yeah, that being said, they do kind of like fill a role in a small card pool by just giving you some chaff that you can fill your deck with that's neutral. So it's probably a net positive for the game that they exist.
The next card is Emergency Cash Level 3. It is a free event that has the supply trait. Gain 4 resources or place 4 supply tokens among assets controlled by investigators at your location or any combination thereof. Thoughts on Emergency Cash Level 3? We have a whole bunch of levels of Emergency Cash.
Yeah, I liked it. I like the level 2 version on Stick to the Plan because it's like free card every game. Yeah, so I liked that.
I don't know how often I've played the level 3, if at all, really.
Okay.
I think like I definitely see its utility. Those supply tokens can be much more worthwhile than they sort of lead themselves on to
Oh yeah.
be. Like I
Oh
guess
yeah.
it really just depends on your deck and what assets you're playing. 4 resources is like kind of whatever, but especially nowadays.
Yeah,
But
especially that's not worth 3 XP to get a fourth resource.
yeah.
Yeah.
But supply tokens, no, that run me down on some useful targets for that
All
matter.
right, here we go, because I have used this in the past. Fingerprint Kit. Adventurer back in the day. Because those supply
Chainsaw.
tokens become ammos. Chainsaw, yeah. Do you just
Breaking.
realize, guys? This is like a perfect transition into Hemlock Vale. Because there's a Hemlock Vale investigator who probably loves this card. See, everything
It
that uses
is
supply
one of the
tokens.
few ways
Yeah.
to boost your acidic ichor.
Oh, yeah, there you go. If you're running Acidic Ichor, yeah, this is actually like pretty good. That's like the only weapon you
If
would
your
ever
table
need.
hasn't already besmirched you for playing that stupid card, yeah.
Yeah. No, this stuff like there's more really good uses. I use it in the past, back when this was the premier way of doing it, playing first aid level 3. That way I had
That's
a
reasonable.
forever first aid. If you're playing a surgical kit deck, this can be pretty good because like that's a whole deck actually. It's kind of slow, but I've tried to make it. Yeah, and I guess if you're already doing Thieves Kit level 3, then that's actually pretty good. But and honestly, like there's some pretty high impact ones like Fingerprint Kit, Chainsaw, Cleaning Kit, or Venturer. Cleaning Kit from Feast of Hemlock Vale. Speaking of the guy who's gonna love this card, because then you're turning supply tokens into things like ammo, extra clues, extra damage. It also goes on your Stick to the Plan. You can guarantee yourself once a game you get to reload your chainsaw.
How
I
would
like
we
this card a
rate
lot.
this one?
I mean, on sheer power level, I feel like a plus one seems pretty appropriate, right? That seems about right.
Yeah,
Like you can get a lot out of it, I feel.
I mean, there's an argument that it's a bless, but it depends. Like, if you're playing something with supplies, then and the supplies are like pretty meaningful, this is a pretty good card. So I'd give it a plus one
Yeah.
as well.
I'm gonna drop it down to a zero in solo. Largely because I think it could be useful in multiplayer because it's a way for you to help an ally. You're either
Yeah.
giving them the resources or supply tokens and reloading something for them, which is some nice versatility there. In solo, I don't know. I have a tough time affording three XP for this, but it is a way, like, I haven't necessarily built a chainsaw deck either, in which case I'd be like, hey, this is four more supply for that. So, and
without having to, like, necessarily draw your chainsaw. Like, draw your second chainsaw and stuff like that. Yeah. Yeah, that being said, even if you're playing solo and your whole deck is based around something like Shedalite, then, you know, you already got... if you already have a deck that uses supply tokens to do, like, big things, then, like, this helps you do more of them, you know? Like, to recharge your flashlight level 3 or something. Yeah.
Yeah, it's really all about, like, are those supply tokens worth more than the resources? And if they are, then this card's really good.
Getting supply tokens is... I don't think there are many cards that actually give you straight up supply tokens, are there?
Not many. I think Venture, this card, and
that's...
I want to say there's... Is there a Guardian card, too?
Oh, yeah, there's a Hemlock Veil card. Cleaning Kit.
I know.
Oh, Contraband. Contraband gives you supply tokens.
Mm.
But that one's wonky, because you gotta, like... You gotta time it right.
So, yeah, it is... it's not unique... in that it gives you, it's the only card that gives you supply tokens, but four supply tokens is a huge amount.
Yeah.
Maybe zero is a little too low. Maybe plus one is better, but I'm gonna stick with it because it costs a lot. That brings us to the, I believe, the final card in the box, and it's a doozy. This is the Key of Yeast. 3-cost asset that has 5 XP. It has a wild and willpower skill icon, item, and relic trait. You get plus 1 to each of your skills for each horror on Key of Yeast. Forced, when any amount of horror would be placed on you, place one of that horror on Key of Yeast. Forced, when Key of Yeast leaves play, discard the top 10 cards of your deck. It has 4 sanity and takes up an accessory slot. I think I recently saw a post on one of the many Arkham Horror Facebook pages where a player had just started playing Key of Yeast and said, it seems strong.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's pretty good. It's pretty good.
Now, this card may have been responsible for the introduction of the list of taboos.
Oh, maybe? I don't remember. Can't remember if it was this or Mr. Rook.
Well, Mr. Rook wasn't tabooed for a long time.
Okay, yeah.
I feel like it was this card, because basically as soon as this card was revealed, everybody lost their minds.
Oh, because you can cheese it. That's the thing. Like, it's because Peter Sylvester lets you cheese it. Because it lets you get over all the downsides. That's the problem. If it said whenever you would take any amount of horror, you had to put one on the Key of Yeast, that means you couldn't just let Peter Sylvester take it all for it, then it would have been fine, to be honest. And also, another thing I gotta say, guys, like, have you seen what's come out of the secret card pool since then? Like, anybody remember Pendant of the Queen? Like, actually, Pendant of the Queen's still a thing. Like, it's ridiculous. Like, this doesn't even do what Pendant of the Queen does, like, by rocketing your game forward as a fast action. Like, I guess what I'm saying is, like, the game is power crept enough that this is actually, like, okay now.
Yeah. Which is wild to say. Like, this card, I remember people, when I first got into this game, people were like, this card is ridiculous, blah, 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 should be banned. Mm-hmm. And I think as time has gone on, people kind of forgot about this card.
It's kind of true.
Largely, I think that's because it got the exceptional keyword in whichever taboo list, and at that point, people are like, yeah, I'm not paying 10 XP for this.
Yeah, that's a lot of XP, because you gotta, like, find it, you gotta play it, and not only that, but you gotta set it up, you gotta get horror on it, and you gotta figure out a way to protect it with, you know, with more sanity soak. I think the problem that was, I think the problem that was there is just too easy to do it with, like, Peter Sylvester level 2. Like, back when this came out, because you didn't have a whole lot of other ways for a survivor to spend XP. So it's just like, oh, hey, I'm Silas, and I have, like, 8 combat, you know, and stuff. That was kind of a little easy to set up, and because just that's the options that were there. It's just that the stuff that's around now is, like, especially with, like, a lot of cards having fast and like giving you actual action compression, which this does not. This does not compress any of your actions at all. It doesn't like discover clues. It doesn't like deal damage. You know, it just lets you pass tests, you know, more reliably, and you got to protect it. So like compared to like today's standards, this card is probably fine. Like, it's not game breaking.
Yeah.
Yeah, I did play this card in a Finn Edwards deck, and I thought it was fine. I think people read this card and they see you get +1 to all your skills, and so they suddenly assume that, oh, you're getting +3 to all your skills. It's like, forever. No, that's not how it works. You've got to get this on the table, then you've got to get it on the table early, for one.
Mm-hmm.
Then you've got to take the horror in order to start powering it up, and depending on how the game is going, that could take some time.
Mm-hmm.
And then you've got to protect it to keep it on the table. So there's sort of a lot of moving parts to get this thing going. And having played it in Finn, where, you know, Finn's got low willpower, so taking horror isn't necessarily the problem. But, you know, getting it on the table and then protecting it and not having access to Peter to cheese it is...
Exactly.
It felt fair. Like, I wasn't, like... It didn't feel like the strongest card in my deck at the time. I haven't really played this card since, because I think they just, you know, when they threw it on the taboo list, and I was just like, okay, fine, I'm just not going to play with it anymore. But when I look back on it now and my experience playing with it, it's strong, but it feels like you've got to put in some work for it. It's not the automatic, you know, I win button that...
I think a lot of Arkham players and designers will suffer from the problem of rating cards or designing cards for the ideal situation and not for the typical. And I think this is one of them, where I think the players freaked out, probably rightly, you know, like for the most part, probably rightly so at the time, because it was kind of easy to cheese it with Peter Sylvester and like Silas and stuff. And then they were like, oh my God, it has three, it gives you +3 to your skills the whole game. You know, it's like not actually the case. One of those that like seems super strong, but like then you got to like go through all the steps. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, I feel like the opportunity cost for this card, even at 5 XP, it's a lot.
Yeah.
Like nowadays you get so much for your experience that playing a card like this is like,
plus accessories are so good. I could play
like Crystalline Elder Sign, get a very similar effect for less experience,
and you don't have to protect it, you know.
Yeah, you know, it's like,
yeah. And it doesn't actually like propel the game forward at all. It doesn't give you any, doesn't try cards, doesn't deal damage, doesn't discover clues. So like, you gotta start comparing this thing to like Lucky Cigarette Case. It's like, what would you rather have? Lucky Cigarette Case, which actually draws you cards, or Key of Ease? Like, it's, you know, it's like one of them actually pushes your game forward. The other, not really, you know. And that's before we talk about Pendant of the Queen. Not a Pendant of the Queen. Key of Ease. Which one's stronger? Yeah, and also like the game, like back in Carcosa era, like the game was slower then, right? You didn't have to move as quick. So you didn't need as much action. Like typical decks of all classes did not need as much action compression as they do like nowadays, you know, as like what's the standard. So this thing, by not providing action compression, you know, it's kind of, it is what it is. It just helps you with some tests. It provides basically wild icons for you. I'm already thinking now, speaking of good accessories, like Empty Vessel. Like Empty Vessel, it heals you and it cancels bad tokens. Like, that kind of does what this does, if you think about it. Then you got to think about it. Would you play Empty Vessel for 4 XP? Or would you play this for 5 XP? You know, like, you know? Got to think that one through.
How does this compare to the new masks from Feast?
Oh, the masks at 0 XP. Man, we're going to have to talk about those in a future video.
The masks are giving you 2 skills, +2 to 2 skills.
Yeah, it's true.
And they recharge.
Yeah, and they're 0 XP.
And they're 0 XP.
And they're slotless. And they cost less. Yeah, it just kind of tells you, like, the power creep that we've seen, you know?
Yeah, because this game is really, like, you get diminishing returns after a while with your stat boosts. It's like, you could play an ally at 3 XP that gives you double stat boosts, You know, if you're thinking about Lola Santiago, Peter Sylvester, stuff like that, like, play those cards at 3 XP, you're basically boosting all the stats you're going to use anyway. So, like Man from Lang said, like, how useful are the other stat boosts, really? Maybe every once in a while, but...
Yeah, and as your card pool gets bigger, you have more ways to, like, rely on one or two stats. I'm thinking, like, rogues. Like, there's been a lot of rogue cards that let you just rely on agility for everything. Same with Seekers and Intellect. So it's like you don't even need to boost your combat as, like, a Seeker or Rogue anymore.
So how do we rate this one?
I think historically we got to give it an Elder Sign, right? Like,
Oh, that's a hard one. We could, you know, we could just end this one with a question mark because we just don't know anymore.
I don't know. I'm gonna give it an Elder Sign. I mean, this card is obviously very powerful, and its historical precedence for the game. Like, it's Elder Sign material.
If I could, I would give it a sanity token. You know, because, you know, it's Carcosa and all that. Nice way to cap off the Carcosa cycle. But no, I'll go with Elder Sign. Like, if you play with this and you put this in your deck, like, and you make it work, and it's really good. Yeah. But not a curse. I'm not giving it a curse.
Having played with this and felt, you know, it was fine. It did what I wanted to do. It boosted a couple stats that I needed. It's not, I think if you're reading this as like, hey, you get +3 to all your stats all the time. Yeah, that seems awesome, but that's not actually what's going to happen when you play the game. As long as you're not trying to cheese this, I think it's fine, and it's Elder Sign material for sure. But I think as the game has progressed, we've certainly seen, I mean, easier ways of getting stat boosts. Well, that is going to do it for our look at the player cards in the Path to Carcosa Investigator expansion. If you have made it this far, thank you very much for watching. It's been a lot of recording, editing, and chatter that has gone on over God knows how many months. But considering that news from FFG these days is few and far between, what else are we going to talk about? We do have a feast for Hemlock Vale. We're just waiting on the cards for that. Most of them have been spoiled over at ArkhamDB. In fact, I think the whole set's up there if you want to take a look at it. And we are going to definitely dig our teeth into those cards. Any final thoughts on the neutrals or the set as a whole?
Carcosa is a great box and a great campaign.
Oh yeah.
So
yeah.
I think I speak for the community at large where if you are a new player getting into this game, this is one of the boxes you should be getting.
Absolutely. Yeah. If you don't already own it, buy this box. It's super good. This is when, like, Arkham really starts taking off as a game. Like, really starts, it really starts getting good between, like, the campaign and the investigator cards. There's a lot of good stuff in here. There are some duds, but there are some superstars, but for the most part, these are, like, nice workhorses. They're going to fill out every one of your decks. Plus, it's the box where you get the amazing Lola Hayes, and once you play Lola Hayes, you're never going to go back. So try that. And great box. Pick it up. Absolutely. 10 out of 10.
I believe Matt is the only one who played Lola Hayes and never went back.
I think everyone actually went back after they played Lola.
I think
it's usually once you play Lola, you go back and you go, I'm actually okay.
I think if there's a room with Lola Hayes players, it's basically Matt standing there yelling, come back, everyone.
There's dozens of us. Dozens.
Dozens.
She's not as complicated as you think.
As he says, scrawling out his giant chart. So you just have to know exactly when to switch role.
The Lola Hayes timing chart, you're right. Maybe I should use this opportunity to announce my three easy payments of 1995 Lola Hayes training program where I teach you all the secrets.
Yeah, but this is a good box. It has a lot of fantastic cards in it. The campaign is still one of my favorites to play. It has a lot of fantastic scenarios in it that continue to be challenging and good tests in solo. Especially for solo players, a lot of the scenarios are very well balanced, whether you're playing solo or multiplayer, which is something you can't say necessarily about some of the later campaigns.
Oh, right.
This is definitely a high point for me in the game. So we will be back hopefully sooner than later with our look at the Feast for Hemlock Vale, and really looking forward to digging into that box. We did have a few spoilers that were on the channel, and now that all the cards are out there, we can take a look at the set as a whole and see how things stack up, and hopefully I will get around to also playing it on the channel, which would be nice to get back into that. So stay tuned. That's going to do it for this episode. If you enjoyed what you hear, remember to like, comment, and subscribe. If you need to contact me, I can be reached at manfromlang@gmail.com. I'm also on Twitter at manfromlang. Until the stars are right, keep your shotgun close and your elder sign closer. Take care out there, and happy investigating.